Hello, I'm RJ City, and you are listening to the Monster Cast. You're going to talk about Bela Lugosi. They're going to talk about Lon Chaney Jr. He'd be so sad, holding his hat, saying, "Please put me in this room and don't unlock the door." And you can't do any better than the Dahl brothers, Jack and Ryan. They're brothers, but they're also bros. What? Pardon? Wrestling. Well, who the hell wants to talk about wrestling? These are horror movies. It's the deep genre. It's a smart genre. Fantastic actors. Fantastic cinematography. Wrestling is just sweating and fireworks and bouncy ropes. There's nothing so happy. You talk about that every week. All right. Let's see them try. Take it away, you crazy dolls.
What's up, you guys? Sean Rossap, Fightful here. You're watching the Monster Cast with Jack and Ryan. A big shout out to those fellas. Good people. Check them.
Jake and Brian. Brandon Cutler here from AEW, and I hope you guys have an awesome podcast with the Monster Cast. What was that? Your name is Jack and Ryan? Shut up, Jack and Ryan.
Wrestling podcast? How fucking original.
I guess I should just, you're welcome.
Here's your host of the Monster Cast, the Straight Edge Monster, Jack and Ryan.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Monster Cast. I'm your host, the Straight Edge Monster, Jack, joined by Ryan. We're back after a week off. Had a friend from North Carolina come visit me for the weekend last weekend. Did a bunch of shit. Now we're back on our bullshit here on the show to give you some fantastic wrestling takes. No worse than JD from NY or Jim Cornette, who also, Jim Cornette, makes a double appearance on the show today. Oh, excited? I know you are, guy. But first, let's get started with the news that you broke to me last night. Don Callis attacked again, but this time, for real. technically it was attacked the first time, for real, the first time as well, but it was just not supposed to go down that way when he got attacked by the BCC and got busted the fuck open. So, at Triple A Mania, of course, among the other eight shows that happened last night, after the show, this was after the show, correct? Yeah, on a football field or soccer field or some shit.
Baseball
field. Okay, my bad. There was a angle done with Takeshita, Callis, and Omega with a bunch of media people around and a few fans as well. I'll let you take it away since you have actually seen a lot more on it than I have. And there's been a couple updates, I believe, as well, or theories thrown out there, too. So go ahead.
Yeah, a couple updates. So apparently it wasn't. At first, the report was that it was a fan, who just like jumped in and started grabbing and tore down Callis to the ground or whatever. Turns out, apparently, the latest information on it is that it was actually one of the cameramen who was there filming the event, who it was still real to him, damn it. He didn't understand that it was part of an angle, and as Callis started moving away from the fight or whatever, he grabbed Callis and took him down to the ground to get him to stop from leaving. He wasn't like punching him or anything. He wasn't like throwing fists, but word is apparently he grabbed Callis around the waist, and you can kind of see it in like the corner of the video, but it's not a really good shot. You can only see their legs. But security at the event was wearing black pants, so you know it's not security.
And you can hear the people behind the camera or the people that was recording it, they were reacting to it as well towards the end of the video. They're like, hey. Trying to get people's attention to separate that shit.
Right. So it's not like Omega got up and had to break kayfabe completely to go break it up or anything. Luckily, everybody kind of caught on like, hey, that guy's not part of this. So everybody started moving over, and toward the end of the video, it kind of cuts off before it gets resolved. But from that, basically, the guy had grabbed him around the waist and kind of ankle tripped him and brought Callis down. And apparently, it hurt Callis for real, as far as his neck is apparently injured and his ankle is injured from this. So Yeah, not the best situation. Maybe I understand why you can't pre-tell everyone that's going to be there what's going on or whatever, but that is one of the, I guess, issues you run into when you run, like, work shoot angles is if it looks like during the work shoot that it's a real fight and that a bunch of people are jumping in to try to break them up and you have somebody there that's not aware, then they might also try to jump in and break stuff up. And unfortunately, that's what happened, and he did get hurt. So,
yeah, I don't think a lot of people realize in these other countries. Like when they went to have backlash in WWE in Puerto Rico, I said that those fans are insane in Puerto Rico. And I was kind of nervous, depending on who was going to be there, right? So like,
yeah.
And then everybody was like, "Oh, it's no big deal. They've been there before." That's not the point, man. There's certain countries that protect that fucking business still to this day. Like we used to,
listen,
where you can't fucking do certain shit around certain people. Like, okay, so the UK, obviously they know, right? Mm-hmm. America knows, Canada knows, but Puerto Rico, Mexico, these fucking, and I think when we've had this conversation India. Before, on the, go ahead.
India.
Yeah, India, exactly.
For some fucking reason, are the worst.
I was very nervous about Saudi Arabia when they first started going over there as well. But then we realized they were just clueless, not because they thought it was real, because they didn't even know who the hell was alive and not alive. But yes, India as well. Especially if it's an Indian wrestler. Oh my God, it's over for you, right?
Or if it's The Undertaker. For some reason, they fucking love The Undertaker, bro.
Yeah.
I don't know what it is. They go crazy for The Undertaker.
But yeah, these people are like really hardcore about that shit. And we had this conversation before on a previous show when we were talking in... like ratio from how big wrestling is compared to the rest of the public in that place, right? So we had this conversation about New Japan because I was always curious, is New Japan really as big as we perceive it to be over here? And you said, no, not really.
Yeah.
Obviously, WWE, even WWE taking the biggest promotion, it's not even fucking 2% of America, right? No one, I mean, they know that it exists, but no one's, but in Mexico, in Puerto Rico, those are huge fucking things. They're viewed at such high levels there that shit like this, I'm actually surprised it doesn't happen more often.
Yeah. I would actually even say that relative to WWE in the United States today, New Japan is more of a mainstream thing in Japan than WWE is in the US, but it's nowhere near what it was in like the 90s with AJPW.
Think about, and to put that in perspective even more, we just started having regular WWE wrestlers go off into other forms of entertainment. In Japan, they do that. They've been doing that. I think Inoki had a fucking soundtrack, like an actual album. Like, there's people that do albums. Hayabusa had a fucking actual singing album. Like, they go off and do politics or music or acting, etc. So, like, and that's been a thing.
A big thing in Japan with New Japan Pro Wrestlers specifically is that you'll see them on a lot of, like, game show type shit or like prank show type shit. If you're familiar with like YouTube reactors, there's a genre of Japanese television that has essentially been that for years. And they get a lot of Japanese wrestlers involved in that sort of stuff too.
Hey, like, don't forget all the videos that we've been seeing on social media lately of New Japan wrestlers in animes that people have been posting constantly. You don't see that in over here. You don't see that. There's no Hulk Hogan Rockin' Wrestling is been gone. Like that was our claim to fame in Sergeant Slaughter and G.I. Joe. That was it.
Well, to be fair, a lot of that is coming from Tiger Mask W, I think it's called. Tiger Mask something. But so I mean it's a pro wrestling anime. But yes, there have been crossover appearances in other ones too, like Suzuki.
Video games as well. Where we just started getting that kind of thing, like Batista and Gears of War as a relatively new thing, but over there, wrestlers in the Yakuza series and shit like that is widespread.
A lot of Tekken stuff too. Okada,
so yeah, I would agree with you that it's. I think it's viewed more highly over there, but I believe that the kayfabe is protected a little bit more over there than it is over here as well.
Yeah, it is.
I mean, you could see that when Okada, after Forbidden Door 1, when he was being asked the questions by the little kid or whatever. How do you wrestle with somebody that has a different language than you? And he tried to spin it and be like, it's all one language type deal. And
we're just fighting. What do you mean?
Yeah, we're fighting. Yeah, we're not talking in the middle of it. Anyway, hopefully Don Callis gets well soon. Next up on the COD, we've got our first Jim Cornette feature here. Jim Cornette doesn't think that women should be in ladder matches. He was referring to a spot that the spot that Zelina did, where she did the code red or like a flipping sunset flip or whatever, and they both bounced off and Zelina went fucking flying off or whatever. It was one of the cooler spots in the Money in the Bank match that they had. So the funny thing is the love-hate relationship I have with Jim Cornette, and it's mostly hate, don't get me wrong, because his views are so outdated, it's fucking ridiculous. But they're only outdated in certain things. Like, there's other things he's spot on, even outside of wrestling. Like, he hates Republicans, all this other shit. But then he says something stupid like this that really pisses me off.
What he's really good at in the wrestling stuff now is that, I will give him credit for this, because he's got so many dog shit takes, and, like, some of his stuff is super, like, stuck in the 80s, all his weird Kenny Omega fucking hate boner shit. It's very off-putting to me. But one thing that he is still pretty good at is that if there's an angle that's playing out, or if there's like a way that like they do a storyline, I've heard him come in after the fact and be like, you know, if they had run this way instead, or presented this way instead, or had this character say or do this instead, it would have made more sense. He's good with that kind of stuff. But
so am I, though. Speaking, I'm good with that.
Right.
Armchair exactly. Quarterback, that's easy, a lot easier than when you were running 100%. Smoky Mountain and putting a bunch of dumb shit out there.
Right, exactly. So the thing is, it's not that valuable of skill, because like every fan who's familiar enough with the product can do that. So I'm not going to say that like nothing he's ever said has been insightful or useful or relevant to modern business, but a lot of it isn't. And this is another one of those things where he's just like, he's stuck on this old way of thinking about how women's wrestling should work. He's stuck on this old way of thinking about how wrestling should work in general. So yeah, no, I didn't hear this one specifically, but I went back and listened to his review of the Ospreay Omega match, just because it, you know, algorithm feeds me and shit, and you know, some of the stuff that he was saying about that too.
Well, algorithm plus, we might want to use we might want to use the show as a rebuttal too. So sometimes I do go out of my way to listen to about 5 minutes of it, and I'm like, okay, if it's really bad, I'll get excerpts from it from somebody on social media. So it's not that big of a deal. I don't have to go out of my way to search fucking Jim Cornette and watch 20-minute videos or whatever.
The thing that bothers me with him is that his goalposts are always moving for what he's considering important in wrestling. So one of the big things that he's always talked about was like, oh, well, does it draw money? Does it like,
well, I can say that the Money in the Bank concept and pay-per-view surrounding it draws money. It's a very awesome fucking pay-per-view. And when you only have a max of two a year, that's not overkilling it, even though they're both on the same show. It's not like fucking TNA Lockdown where every match was a fucking cage match. You got 10 goddamn matches and they're all cage matches. So I view this as a different thing. Also, the reasoning he was given behind why the women shouldn't be in it is because of the spot that they did. That specific spot he was talking about was Zelina, and I forgot who the fuck she did it to. I want to say Zoe Stark, but I'm not positive on that, so don't quote me on that. But when they get up and act like it didn't hurt them or something, and then Hobbs is selling a ladder attack or something or whatever, he's trying to justify it as Hobbs should no-sell it if they're no-selling it type deal. Well, like, why is it hurting Hobbs, rather, and not hurting the people in this fucking Money in the Bank match type deal? And I'm sitting there like, well, why are you viewing them as the same thing anyway? Hobbs isn't getting hit by a ladder from Zelina Vega. He's getting hit from a ladder from a Brian Cage or a Ricky Starks or something like that. That's not the same. So it doesn't matter. It's not even the same amount of force. So I don't even understand the correlation between the two.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, I do think that sometimes people that watch women's wrestling watch it with the mindset that like everything hurts equally as it does in men's matches. But the truth is that humans generally, like across genders, have the same pain tolerance, but not necessarily the same ability to apply force.
My counter argument to him, if I was talking to him in person, would be, okay, so Ric Flair can chop Ricky Morton and he fucking hurts like a motherfucker, but Ric Flair can chop Nikita Koloff and he no-sells it. Why isn't he reacting the exact same way to the same amount of fucking pressure? Because it's fucking different people. That's why. Doesn't even make any sense, dude.
Or if, if you had, what the fuck was that guy with no chin? James Ellsworth. If you had James Ellsworth chop somebody and they no-sell it, is that just as bad as Ric Flair chopping somebody and them.
Yeah, it wasn't like Will Hobbs was taking a fucking ladder shot from James Ellsworth, right? And then selling it, etc. You know what I'm saying? Like, and then Zelina Vega is around the same size as pretty much, I mean, she's the smallest one out of probably the group, but she's around the same size. It's not that big of a fucking drop off. No one's over there being like, oh my God. She just no-sold fucking Zelina's move or some shit. Like, I felt like he went out of his way to make a point about this when he didn't need to. Women should most certainly have Royal Rumble matches, Hell in a Cell matches, ladder matches. It's asinine that you would think otherwise.
Here's the thing, too. Even if you think they're not good, they're going to have to keep having them until they are good. So there's really no argument for it, even if you don't find them appealing now or if you don't think that they're as good.
The issue with women's wrestling, in my opinion, is the fact that they don't get enough time to get good faster, right? So then by the time that they actually do get good or like, when you can have like 8 women in one match and it'd be like, oh man, this is good, then like the next year they're out of wrestling because they're too old, and then you're bringing up a whole new crop of fucking NXT stars who now have to relearn that whole thing, and you're right back from square one. If you just gave them more time and more reps, we wouldn't even be having this discussion.
Yeah. But
I enjoyed the women's Money in the Bank ladder match, though.
Yeah, it was fun.
I thought it was good.
Yeah, it was good.
The spot with Becky and Trish on the ladder and the table. The spot, obviously, at the end, which I said I was one of my favorite spots with the handcuffs. The spot with Zelina that he was complaining about was great. Like, there was no huge mishaps or anything. So, like, that's all you can ask for. It wasn't Joey Mercury getting fucking busted open in the face out there. So, what's the problem here?
Well, that's how you know men shouldn't have ladder matches. People got hurt before.
But that's not the only asinine Jim Cornette take of the show, so stay tuned. But first, G1 Climax Night 1 and Night 2 started off. Ryan watched all of it, or just Night 2?
Just Night 2. I didn't.
All right, so before you get started, I want to start on this one because I want to say who my biggest shocks out of the first two nights was, to me, personally.
It's pretty obvious.
Well, I don't know. I might not even have the same ones. Obviously, Tai Chi defeating Ospreay was my top one. Kaito defeating Yoda was up there for me because Kaito's from a different promotion and Yoda, they're trying to build him up as, I mean, he came back and fucking went right against Sonata. So I thought that was kind of surprising to me. But I think I like it though, because if they want to try to make him a legitimate threat in this tournament in the G1, he is going to have to get some wins against some, you know, higher level people. Kingston defeating Shingo was a surprise to me. Cobb defeating Naito was also my last one that was personally surprising. Because Naito, I feel like Naito usually starts those off hot and then dies off at the end. So that's why that one was shocking to me.
I agree. Yeah, that was... I did not expect Kingston to beat Takagi. I definitely thought that he was going to come in and do like the beat all the lower guys, lose all the top guys type run, but coming in and beating Takagi...
And just kind of ended up being mid-tier or whatever, getting like, you know, 11 points or whatever and just not making it to the final four. But he had a quality outing type of thing.
Yeah. And the Tai Chi one, I mean, at least it made sense in the context of the match. Like, he was pretty much selling the... he was still selling the match from Forbidden Door, like, throughout the match, too. Like, it was... The commentary was selling it, too. So, you know, it's... It's interesting. It's interesting to have Tai Chi.
When you were watching, was Kevin Kelly on the call?
I watched the Japanese version.
Okay. Because he wasn't on Collision. That's why I was wondering. I just figured he was doing Night 2 or whatever.
Yeah. Actually, I heard people preferred him not being on Collision, so...
I don't have a problem with him, but Ian Riccoboni did so good last night. It's not that I dislike Kevin Kelly. It's that Ian Riccoboni was fucking killing it last night.
Except for when he called it Ring of Honor.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
But hey,
he did do that.
Bailey's in the Judgment Day, so what are you going to do?
Yeah.
Well. All right, so besides those obvious outcomes, like, who's impressed you the most so far through the first two nights? Because usually the way the G1 works is everybody comes out firing on all cylinders in the first few nights, right? And then it kind of goes into a lull in the middle, and you'll have a couple here and there that's like, right, everybody's like, oh, you need to go out of your way to watch that. And then it's like the last fucking 3-4 nights is like fucking barn burner type deal all the way leading up to the tournament. So the first couple nights, anybody stood out?
Once they know they don't have to try anymore, yeah.
Wouldn't it be funny if, like, Gato doesn't tell you if you're going to win until, like, later on, right? So then, like, you start getting the... You get the the night by night basis, like you go out there and you're like, oh, you're losing this one. You start paying attention to the standings, like, you know what? Fuck this. I'm not going. I'm going to fucking start phoning it in. Fuck this. I'm not going to make it to the final four. Fuck this shit. That'd be so funny, dude.
That's why I should put Orange Cassidy in there. Just, he loses a couple of his first ones. Like, well, like, mathematically, I can't win. So I think I'm just going to take it easy. I don't know. There's so many people in this one though that a lot of the matches I start watching, I'm like, man, I don't really give a shit about this. Like,
I've never been a huge fan of the champion being involved in the G1, but I get it because there's so many people in the G1 now. Like, who's he going to fight on these nights? And people want to see the champion fight. So yeah. I understand it. It's just, I wish it wasn't that way. There's a lot of fucking matches you have to do though, so you might as well go ahead and put the champion in there too.
But there's a lot of people in it where I'm just like, I know you're not going to win. So I don't really give a shit about this match.
Yeah, you feel like that in this year's for sure?
This year's.
Yeah.
So like Shane Haste and Alex Coughlin, like I'll watch that match. None of y'all are winning the fucking G1. Or Mike.
Ren Narita and Shoto went to a draw.
Now that was actually a good match though. And also they're actually up and coming in New Japan. So, you know, they probably won't win either, but they'll at least be competitive. Like Mikey Nichols and Aaron Hanare. Like.
Yeah.
I know Hanari just kind of got like a visual repackage or whatever, but you know, I'm watching that and I'm like, okay, like whatever happens with matches, it's not consequential. Like who gives a shit?
Yeah, it's, I feel it's bad a filler match for the show.
They're not bad wrestlers at all. Like they're good wrestlers. It's just, and the match was good too. It takes some of the weight away from it when it's a round robin tournament and you know who's not going to be.
Isn't it kind of like the same way that I feel about the Royal Rumble when you're throwing tag teams in there? Like, bitch, you're not winning this. So TMDK is in there. Shane Haste and Nichols, like you just said. They're not winning. They're not winning this. It's the same way I feel about Royal Rumble when you throw out fucking the Disciples of Apocalypse in there. Like, y'all not winning? Y'all not winning this? What's the point?
Well, the threat is that they could team up and throw out a bunch of people, obviously.
You're assuming that they're going to have the same number. That is a RNG number, by the way, and not predetermined at all.
Totally not predetermined. I believe they still pick it out of a little
the rolling thing. Yeah, just like they do the lethal lottery for the blind eliminator tag tournament.
There's no way to fake that.
All right, we'll keep our eyes close on the G1 climax though for sure. So who do you think are like the real legit possibilities to be in the final four though? Or final two, I guess. Is that how it's going to go? No, it's going to go, is it going to be like Super Juniors where it's the top two from each one?
I don't know.
Or is it just going to be the winner of... Or no, it's four blocks, right?
There's four blocks.
It's four blocks this year. Yeah, okay, that's right. Okay, so so it'll be two and two. So who do you think will be the final four then?
Probably Kaito from the A block, because I think they're going to set up an Okada thing with B block. So I think it's Okada and Kaito from the first two blocks. And then C block is confusing. I actually don't.
That's the one that has Eddie Kingston and all them, the heavy hitters. Yeah.
Eddie Kingston and Finley and like Evil and all them. So I actually don't know. And then B block. Fuck. Naito and Tanahashi are still at zero. Added, and
yeah, they both lost their first one. Yeah, that's crazy.
So I don't know. That one's tough. I mean, one of them would make sense, but Goto would also make sense. Zack Sabre Jr. if they really want to mix shit up, I guess, but pretty much nobody else.
I don't want to see Zack Sabre Jr. just because he's got another championship, though. I'd rather see somebody that doesn't have a championship make it to the Final Four, I feel.
Yeah, so, and that one is probably going to be one of your three, like, long-term New Japan guys, so Naito, Tanahashi, Goto, but...
Yeah, you can't go wrong with not Naito or Tanahashi, honestly.
Or Goto.
That's Goto's depending if they stay healthy through the whole thing, too, though.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, I think C-Block is the one that's most up in the air, for sure.
Next up, it's been reported by Dave Meltzer that not only is merch at an all-time high in wrestling, but so are ratings, attendance, everything. Like, it's fucking nuts. So, my question is, is this a new like major boom of wrestling, or is this just a blip on the radar and it's all going to settle out and be normal in a relatively short fashion?
I'm sorry. He said ratings are at an all-time high.
Like you know what I'm talking about. Like comparatively speaking to like the downgrade from cable. He's not saying cable ratings are at an all-time high. just say in ratings in general, ticket sales are at all time high.
Well, is he adjusting for inflation on that?
Yeah, he has to be. He has to be. He has to be. Like, there's no way it's not. Even the Attitude Era stuff, he said it's the merch sales right now are higher than Attitude Era, higher than Hogan Era for WWE alone, let alone WWE, who's also making a shit ton off of merch sales.
The only reason that I could imagine that that would possibly be true if it's accounting for inflation too is just that the e-commerce model of, like, internet shopping and shit has changed things significantly enough to where that.
But what I'm saying is that it wasn't that high in 2022 or 2021 or 2020 where the e-commerce model was the exact same. So what I'm saying is, do you think this is just a blip, an anomaly, or is this something that's we're seeing, like, actually going to be a rise?
So assuming everything is adjusted for inflation, my first thought on that would be, yes, it probably wasn't the same in 2021 and 2020 or whatever. AEW as a company was just starting out. And then WWE was probably on, like, a slightly upward trajectory. So then as AEW is coming up and then WWE is coming up too, they kind of meet at some cross point up here. So if you go back in time a little bit, then yeah, 2021 might not be as high. So it's really just the growth of AEW that's probably pushing a lot of that. When you're talking about two companies and their merch sales plus the e-commerce model, it makes more sense than looking at, like, Attitude Era shit or like even, you know, like early 2000s type WWE only. So maybe...
Also working for them in all of this is an extra show for AEW with Collision. You got a extra pay-per-view with All In that's sold a shit ton of tickets. You've got WWE selling their entire company with new TV deals coming up, which will be interesting to see how that plays out. And AEW possibly renewing up with WBD as well. Do you think those are all factors as well into all this? Of why numbers are up.
I mean, again, without knowing exactly what he's citing, it'd be hard to say. Is this something he said on Twitter or what?
I believe it was on Twitter, yes.
Let me see what context.
It was a while ago. I don't know how long it's going to take you to find it unless you just search merch, I guess. And it should pop up on his shit. I mean, I think the main part of the conversation was merch, but I believe he mentioned other things too. And hopefully it was a quote tweet and not a reply, or you're not going to fucking take forever to find it. Should have just copied and pasted it on my fucking notepad.
There's more overall viewing, and that all the measurable numbers like attendance, ticket sales, and merch are at a high point from the past 20 years, or a high point period. The question that he's responding to is, do you think there's more individuals watching or more wrestling being watched by a percentage of the fan base?
Well, we're absolutely consuming more wrestling than we were.
Yeah, that's true.
For sure. Even a question.
More overall viewing, and that all the measurable numbers like attendance, ticket sales, and merch are at a high point from the past 20 years or a high point period. I just can't imagine that ticket sales right now are higher, attendance is higher right now than like 1999. Or like 98.
See, I thought that too, but if you've been paying attention to WWE shit and articles, every time they've had one of these fucking shows this past year, I swear they've been fucking, I don't know about attendance, but the gate, for instance, are all record breakers. They've been touting all these shows as record breakers. They just broke the record in fucking Money in the Bank. They just broke the record in Puerto Rico. They just broke the record in fucking some random ass town in Connecticut type deal.
But when they do that, they are not accounting for inflation, because WWE loves to say shit like that, and they wouldn't intentionally, like, say, oh, well, accounting for inflation is actually not the highest.
That's the thing. I would have to go back and see if they're referencing attendance and the ticket sales or just the gate. But yeah. It is a thing that they've been fucking just touting constantly. Yeah. But that could also be, like you said, because they're trying to sell these TV rights as well to people.
Right.
But yeah, it's fucking nuts. Like, if you think about it, even 20 years, like, let's say he meant that specifically 20 years ago is 2003. So that's the end of the Attitude Era right there. So it's still technically Attitude Era before we get to the Ruthless Aggression Era or whatever.
Well, the thing is, in this tweet, says we are at a high point from the past 20 years or a high point period. And I think the high point period, I think, might not be entirely true, but probably for the last 20 years, I can see that, yeah.
Fucking insane.
Yeah. Here's the thing, too. Even if it's less people, like let's say it is less people total, I do think people are spending more on it. So for like merch sales and things like
I've never spent more on a wrestling promotion in my life than I have for AEW.
Right. And I think that having two big brands, I think that, like I was talking about earlier, the e-commerce model making the stuff like super accessible. I wonder what the percentage of so there's an interesting statistic when it comes to measuring something's growth over time, and because I do data stuff for work, but there's a way to measure stuff where it's like you're not measuring how much money you're making or how much people are spending like in flat dollars over time because it's not as valuable, but what percentage of their income they're spending on it. So especially with like movie tickets, like way back in the past or whatever, if movie tickets cost like $3 but everybody was only making $7.50 an hour, that's almost half of their hourly rate. Whereas now if a movie ticket is like $6 but most people are making $15 an hour, then it's technically more. And if you adjust it for inflation, and inflation in that same time frame probably hasn't doubled the price, but if you do it as percentage of income, then it becomes a completely different statistic to measure. So that is something I would be curious to look at specifically for the like the ticket sales and how much tickets cost now versus what they cost then, adjust it for inflation and then figure out percentage of income. But yeah, all this stuff is like very in my wheelhouse as far as like what I actually do for work. So it's always interesting to me when somebody says something like this because I always want to go and dig into it. But yeah, I mean, if that's true, that's great. It makes sense on its surface. Like intuitively, it makes sense because there are two major companies and we are in a period where consumption is pretty easy.
Yeah, and yeah, like I was about to say, not only do you have the AEW acting in the, for lack of a better company to use, a WCW term, like they're WCW right now, the WWE, so you have the two major companies, and then now it's easier to access New Japan than it was when WCW actually existed, when you had to trade tapes and all that shit. So it's easier to go get this with the streaming services stuff. A lot of people are saying, like, the streaming service is killing Disney on one hand in the actual movie theaters by having the streaming service, because everybody knows that they're just going to throw it up there as soon as they can so that people keep having the fucking streaming service. And then they're looking at the box office bombs and they're like, oh, that movie sucked, but it's got good reviews. It's because you have the streaming service and they already subscribe to that. There's no reason to go to the fucking movie theater to go spend all that money on it. Now in wrestling, I think that it's working to their advantage though, because now I can go watch fucking New Japan anytime I want for $8 a month or whatever. You got Ring of Honor sitting there on a streaming service. You got Stardom on a streaming service, and you don't have to fucking worry about all that outside shit because there's nothing where it's like, oh, I have to go to the movie theater to watch these things. So it's the streaming service is actually benefiting the WWE and New Japan and all these other companies, Ring of Honor, and hopefully one day AEW. Whereas in other forms of entertainment, I don't think they're helping as much.
Is one of the topics that you've written out, because I don't want to go into it if you've already got it, but do you have the AEW 12 pay-per-views thing as a topic?
No, I had it.
Okay.
But I was getting a shit ton of topics, so I had to cut some stuff. But you can lump it in here.
Here's why I think it's relevant to the conversation, especially on the streaming end of things. So Warner Brothers is apparently the one asking AEW to run 12 pay-per-views a year. And my question is, why the fuck does Warner Brothers care how many pay-per-views they run? Because pay-per-views aren't on TBS, they're not on TNT.
Because so Warner Brothers owns BR.
Yeah, but they're not exclusively doing it on BR. Like they also do it on like Fight and stuff, right?
Yes, for everything outside of the US, yes.
So I wonder how much of that has to do with like them wanting to do more for exclusivity for streaming stuff too, like throwing it on.
Yes,
Max.
I want them off of BR completely. I don't give a fuck if Warner Brothers owns them. I want it on HBO Max, because if that's the main, or just Max, my bad. Because Max is the big thing that you're pushing right now, because you've combined the two companies together. Then I feel like that's what they're trying to push it for. But I don't know what the contract status is between AEW and BR, because I feel like if it was an open ended thing, he could have got off of that at any time. There's clearly a contract in place that he has to be on there so many times or for so long before they can break off and find a new way to process these fucking pay-per-views for somebody else through a different outlet.
Yeah.
Because that's what everybody's been complaining about with the two pay-per-views back-to-back, and they've just officially, well, it's not official, it's not been announced by AEW, but it's been reported that All In is going to be on the BR app. Well, guess what All Out's going to be on? The BR app. That's a fucking $100 in a week. And a lot of people aren't going to do, they're going to choose one or the other, and it's going to make you look bad when you release those numbers as Tony Khan.
I don't think they're both going to be full price.
Well, that's what they're saying. They say they might release them as a bundle, but that's still hurting you, though.
I think if you do both for, like, $69.99.
I don't understand why All In would be a thing that you have to put on BR anyway, because it's not a pay-per-view that you ever had before, right? It was something that Ring of Honor did, and then you got the rights to it after you bought the Ring of Honor library. So this is a fifth thing. Why are we not making a deal with fucking WB to put it on fucking HBO Max? Or Max, I keep fucking calling HBO Max, but why are you not putting it on fucking Max to stream it on there? There's no fucking thing that's in the contract. I can't imagine there would be a thing in the contract that Tony Khan signed with his lawyers looking over it. Talking about some, hey, if you decide to run some more fucking pay-per-views, we get the rights to those to show them on BR as well. Away from the four that you do. I cannot imagine he would said yeah to that.
I don't know. Maybe he didn't. I mean, it's not like that's that bad of a deal or arrangement or anything, so I don't know why I would reject it.
But the TV company that you made the deal with before you even started, you already knew they had a streaming service. HBO Max was a thing already. You had to know in the back of your mind that that's what you were like headed for, like that's what you wanted eventually, was to be grouped up on their streaming platform. They already got the All Access show on the platform. I don't know. It's weird to me. I don't know. I don't know what the... I wish we knew the contract details of the BR to AEW situation and how WB fits into that, because everybody was under the assumption that All In would be on HBO Max, or Max rather, and then All Out would be on BR as a traditional pay-per-view. And he's going to have to release this information out soon, man, because people got to fucking get ready for this. Fuck matches. We need to know how we're going to watch it. What the fuck?
Yeah.
And you got Death Before Dishonor coming up this Friday.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about that.
And they've already pulled Mark Briscoe out of the fucking one match that they announced for it. Because he got hurt. So now the main event, which was Claudio and Mark Briscoe, isn't happening. It's going to be Claudio and somebody else. Anyway, let's move on. I want your thoughts on this. Undertaker said that if he was like in charge of, I guess, creative WWE or whatever, he said that they should bring back Swamp Bray Wyatt. Forget the Fiend, forget the Uncle Howdy shit, just scrap it all and bring him back. If he does come back, obviously, because he's been gone for a while now. But if he does come back, just bring him back as Lantern Toting fucking Swamp Bray Wyatt. Agree, disagree?
It was less campy. It was more interesting, I guess.
Yeah, more grounded in reality for sure, obviously.
Yeah.
You don't think it's weird that the dead man was the one that's saying this, though?
He doesn't want anybody coming in on his yard. His supernatural yard. That's the problem. No, I mean, even...
Maybe he just sees that the way that they're treating him as that character isn't working because he's taking too many L's.
I mean, it would be better than the shit that they're doing with it right now. It'd be better than the Uncle Howdy stuff and all the... Or we're doing.
I think that's just because the Uncle Howdy shit wasn't moving fast enough. They were trying to make another slow-ass storyline like they did with the Bloodline, and it wasn't catching on. Like, if they would have moved that a little bit quicker... And we already figured out who the fuck Uncle Howdy was and all this other stuff, maybe it would have worked a little bit better. But because they were talking about at one point him having his own faction of people, right? So then Alexa gets pregnant and Bray apparently has some kind of medical issue or hurt, whatever happened after the Mountain Dew Pitch Black match and the shit with Bobby Lashley and Lesnar fell through at WrestleMania. And now he hasn't been seen from since. So, or heard from since, rather.
It doesn't work. Like, it just doesn't work in this context. It doesn't work. Supernatural shit is very hard to get to work in wrestling now, I feel like. Even stuff like House of Black or whatever, they come off very ominous in presentation or whatever, but they're never doing anything like supernatural.
Yeah, not they mid-match. Show up when the lights, yeah, exactly. When
the lights go out and they show up sometimes, but that's still explainable completely within the realm of fucking reality, right? I think they should just move away from all that stuff in general. Maybe bringing back Swamp's not a terrible idea. I think that it's going to be hard to explain the transition. I don't think you could just, like, just have him show up like that and then never say what happened to fucking Uncle
Has Howdy WWE ever had a problem dropping a storyline and pretending it never existed, though?
Listen, I know that they do that, but what I'm saying is that I think it would be very fucking stupid.
I'm just saying, you don't have to explain it if you never had the intention to explain it. I was being real.
Yeah.
If you were never going to fucking explain it to us anyway, then who cares?
Maybe. All right. Yeah.
Next up, the second coming of Jim Cornette on the show here. All right, so it was a handicap match on Twitter. It was Matt Hardy versus Jim Cornette and the great Brian Last. I don't know. There's no way you missed this, right? So basically, the entire root of the conversation was Matt Hardy trying to bring balance back into the force, which is the wrestling fans, between the cult of Cornette and the CM Punk diehards. It was basically a subject of toxic fan bases, basically. And of course, Cornette and great Brian Last had to go on there and fucking defend their fan bases, which are toxic. And it got into a shouting matchup, basically a pissing contest, of course, which is what it usually happens on Twitter. But obviously, I think I know whose side you're on, but I'm going to ask you anyway, whose side are you on and why?
So I did catch some of this because I remember that Brian Last was tweeting, or he was...
By the way, as much as I dislike Cornette and his takes, the great Brian Last has to be the last person fucking commenting on any of this stuff. He has to be.
Yeah.
Who are you?
You can't be a never been and then act like you've got the same clout or pull as Cornette does when he says some of the...
How do you say that I'm better at my job than you ever were at yours when you don't have any idea what the fuck his job entails, basically?
Yeah.
Matt Hardy could start a podcast right now and get more viewers than you. If you had a podcast by yourself. The only reason that you even have viewers is because of Jim Cornette.
Yeah.
At least that's my take. That's my quick take on it.
He's never done anything in wrestling. Like, let's be real. He just hasn't. So it is weird for him to try to pull, like, yeah, I'm a sidekick to Jim Cornette on Jim Cornette's podcast, and I'm really good at that, whatever the fuck that means. in this conversation, the problem is that Matt's original point, like from the start, it's like a losing uphill battle, right? You're not going to get through to these people. These are not people that you're going to convince. You're not going to logic them out of it. You're not going to like talk them into being fucking normal.
I mean, you could say that with any Twitter argument, pretty much.
Yeah, well, some people you can get through, but most people, yeah, absolutely not. Like, people are so rooted in their position. I don't think that Brian Last is in a position to have that conversation at all, or in a position to be talking the shit that I did see him talking, what little of it I did catch. Some of the stuff where he was, like, trying to downplay Matt Hardy's career while playing his own influence or whatever the fuck based on his very limited fan base, honestly, like Brian Last fans. Okay. Cool. But I will say that I think Matt Hardy's point from the start was just like sort of doomed to failure because you're not doing anything by saying any of that except for alienating the people that you're trying to appeal to by already othering them as you're trying to like make some emotional appeal to them. But then also you're just like grabbing their attention for them to come like vociferously defend themselves against.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you're in a, like you said, he's in a lose-lose situation, because even if you take the Seth Rollins route and be like, hey, here's a picture of my bank account, right? Let me see a picture of yours. It's just going to make you look like an asshole. And that's exactly what he wants you to do, so that he can have the moral high ground on top of the being an asshole from the jump anyway. So there's literally no way you can win this argument in the eyes of people that are also viewing this entire fucking thread of you guys going back and forth, because they're just not going to fucking stop talking. They're going to have to get the last word in too.
Yeah. And the truth is, like, what Matt was saying to Brian specifically is absolutely true. Like, his main allegation toward Brian last specifically was like, you two intentionally fuel like a toxic culture. And that's true. Like, there's no way that anyone is going to listen to the shit that they say or read the shit that they post on Twitter or anything like that and try to deny that. Like, it's fucking nonsense. Now, you'll have people come out and be like, oh, well, I listen to him and I agree with what a lot of what he says, but I don't consider myself toxic. Cool. A, who the fuck asked? B, just because you don't consider yourself toxic doesn't mean that the things that you say, the things that you do, like...
Well, you're fueling the toxicity by fucking supporting the person that is doing it, because guess what? If you got no support, he wouldn't have a show anymore.
Yeah.
So you're still part of the problem. Jim Cornette's biggest claim to fame is that he's just a better version of Disco Inferno. Because, like, okay, so, like, if Jim Cornette didn't exist, Disco Inferno would just step into the role anyway, right? Because he has the same issue. He's fueling toxicity all the time, but his fan base is not nearly as big as fucking Jim Cornette. The main difference I see between Jim Cornette and Disco Inferno is that Jim Cornette has an actual time frame of where if he's speaking on that time frame, I'll listen to him. I'm not listening to fucking Disco Inferno at all, right? Yeah. If it's 93 and beyond and before, and Jim Cornette wants to talk about something, I'm all ears, dude. I'm all ears. But if it's anything after that, or if he's on Dark Side of the Ring, I'll listen to it. If it's anything that's modern, from like 2000 to now, I'm not listening to the fucking Jim Cornette's take on it. I'm just not.
Yeah. The thing is, too, as soon as Brian Last started trying to talk about, like, oh, like, you're goofier than me and you're whining and, like, what you're doing by trying to point out toxicity is toxic and all that shit, like, bro, you were the biggest fucking cry bully bitch, I swear to God. Like, I can't stand people who do that shit. It's like, at the same time that they're trying to...
You know what it reminds me of? Like, it's like the kids when they say, I know you are, but what am I? That's what he's doing.
Right. And the problem is that it doesn't work. So the thing is, if we're all at a fucking dinner table and I say, like, hey, like, the thing that you just said was actually pretty rude and made it uncomfortable. And then they're like, well, actually, you're also making it uncomfortable by pointing out how I was rude. So who's really the worst one? Like, but still you. Like, this isn't working. This isn't how this works.
Yeah. You can't be a worse person for holding somebody accountable.
Right. Pointing out the problem is not the same as causing the problem. Even if both result in the form of tension, one is necessarily worse. And I think that was going over everybody's head. A lot of people just have very poor interpersonal skills, honestly, so it doesn't surprise me that this devolved the way that it did. But it was very strange seeing some of the shit that he would try to bring up. Like, and Matt Hardy was... Here's the thing. Every time that, like, in general, when people bring up things like, oh, you know, well, I'm a fucking legend, I'm famous, I've got paychecks, I'm living the life that I want to live, whatever, a lot of times that comes off really, like, egotistical and weird. But in this case, it actually did make sense to bring up, because one of the things that Brian was saying was, like, he was essentially trying to talk shit about Matt Hardy's accomplishments and stuff and, like, his impact on the business and try to compare his own to Matt's. And I'm just like, you're fucking ridiculous.
And trying to say that he's only where he's at because of Jeff and shit like that, yeah?
Yeah, like, no, you're insane. And talking about, like, it literally called his work shit and stuff. And I'm like, bro, like... Do you have any idea how many tag teams today were influenced by either the Hardys or the fucking Rockers or Legion of Doom? And, like, those are the three archetypes? Like, are you fucking serious right now, bro? Like...
Well, I would say Rock and Roll Express over the Rockers, but I get what you're saying.
Yeah, that's who I meant. I don't know.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, the Rockers were influenced by the Rock and Roll Express, but yeah, I get what you're saying.
Yeah. Or the Steiners, like, those are your
Steiners, yeah, yeah, Midnight Express, Steiners. I kind of lumped them all together, like the technical guys, yeah, yeah,
Right. So to say that, like, his work is shit or whatever, like, the whole delete thing, regardless of whether or not you find it goofy, it did change a lot in the industry. That whole model that he came up with for, like, outside of wrestling matches that are filmed as
cinematic,
like, short films or whatever.
Yeah, cinematic wrestling matches. And then, of course, not only that, but putting Impact on the map in general after they had been, like, just nowhere, right? When that fucking whole storyline came up and he was broken Matt Hardy and the clips of that shit started going viral on social media and stuff, and then it led up to the first compound match or whatever. Like, when that came out and it ended up being, like, super fucking entertaining, that put Impact back up there. Like, people were actually tuning into Impact to see this shit. So how can you say that his work is shit? Also, if his work is shit, he wouldn't have a job like Ryback right now. He wouldn't have a job like... Well, I'm serious. He wouldn't have a job like Glenn Gilberti right now. Like, AEW would not have hired him if his work was shit. You get what I'm saying? Like, what the fuck are you talking about?
Okay, I will, just to play the other side of that and Steelman the other side of that as strongly as possible. It is possible that they ended up hiring him because the Young Bucks really wanted to work with him or whatever. But the thing is, he wouldn't still be there at this point. That's the difference. Apparently, he actually does do a lot of stuff with, like, helping people in the back and coaching and stuff like that, which is great. Everybody, and
you know why he can do that? Because his work wasn't shit.
Right, exactly. Yeah. So even
I'm not listening to someone in the back if their work was shit.
As much as I enjoyed, like, the Delete era stuff, like, I think everybody can kind of admit that it was campy as fuck. It was a little bit goofy, but it worked because he was so good at presenting it the way that he did and made it come off, like, even though it's, like, very campy, like, very, like, over the top, it still worked. And nothing Brian Last has ever said or done or worked on or been involved with in his entire fucking life.
How many, let's be real, how many things from Impact has WWE ever taken and been like, oh yeah, we can use that? That's one of those things. They used that for Bray Wyatt. Bray Wyatt was inspired by that. That's one of the reasons why Bray Wyatt wanted to work with Matt Hardy when Matt Hardy came back to WWE. He wanted him to go back to the Broken gimmick. That's why they became the tag team and won the tag titles. How can you say that this man's work is shit after his actual tag team run, when he was doing all the TLC matches and all that stuff, was influencing a whole new fucking generation of tag teams that you're seeing today? Like New Day, Usos, Young Bucks, who you considered, like, the top three tag teams easily right now, right? And then how can you fucking say, and the Briscoes before that, and then how can you fucking say that it didn't influence other genres as well, even in his other characters, when you have literally cinematic matches in AEW and WWE because of him?
Yeah, that should, I don't think people understand how influential he was in helping Pandemic Wrestling be as, like, durable as it was. Without that as a model, it's not like I think anybody else would have necessarily gone to that without him having already previously done it, to be honest. I think they would have kept running the empty arena shows and not really had a lot going on, and it would, you know, it necessarily would have been worse as a result. One of the things too, and it seems like Brian Last's original comment in reply to Matt was taking issue with Matt saying that Cornette's some of his opinions and the things that he was saying and, like, whatever, was intentionally seeding dissent. And Brian Last's reply to that was, oh, like, how is telling the truth seeding dissent? Brother, there's no fucking truth in trying to pretend like Kenny Omega's a bad wrestler. There's just not. It's not true. It's never been true. You sound fucking stupid every time you say it. So the idea that you are telling the truth and that's what's seeding dissent, when you say shit like, oh, Kenny Omega, all he does is dance and do flips. I don't remember the last time I've seen Kenny Omega do a fucking flip, except for when he's doing the You Can't Escape thing. That's not a flip. It's a fireman's carry into a fucking, like, he's posting them and then going up to the rope or whatever. That's the only move where he, like, does flippy shit. What are you talking about? He does dives up to the outside, but who the fuck doesn't? Like, it's coming from people who clearly don't actually watch his work. And then when they do watch his work, they dig their fucking hardest to try to find something wrong with it, and very rarely actually can. So they end up hyper-focusing on, like, one or two little things that happen in the match to try to like bolster this viewpoint that they have that he's a bad wrestler. When you're engaging in confirmation bias to that extent, yes, you are seeding dissent by living in a fucking version of reality that nobody else lives in, where Kenny Omega is a bad wrestler. When you say shit like, Oh, yeah, he wrestled a little girl in fucking Japan back in whatever. Okay, cool. You wrestled a fucking Ninja Turtle, bro. Do you not remember this? You don't remember wrestling a fucking Ninja Turtle? Because I remember it. It was stupid as shit. And the thing is, it's actually more impressive to wrestle a 9-year-old girl and make it look like a fucking interesting competitive match. It's more interesting and compelling and impressive to wrestle a fucking doll and make it look like an interesting, compelling competitive match. That's talent, okay? Having some dude come out in a fucking Ninja Turtle outfit to scare you while you're holding your tennis racket is not compelling, it's not interesting, it's not hard, it's not difficult, it's not talented. You don't know what the fuck you're talking about. And this idea that they're just telling the truth is a fucking joke. So I understand why Matt got so upset about that. Trying to do this whole like, oh, well, if people get mad about the truth, bro, it's not our fault. We're not doing anything wrong. It's not the truth. It's never been the truth. You're fucking delusional.
Yeah, the whole thing is Matt Hardy tries to fucking bridge the gap between the toxic fans so that they can all get on the same page and not be as toxic, and then the leader of those toxic fan bases come out and make it more so, and that would set me the fuck off too. Like, you're literally undoing everything that I'm trying to accomplish here so that people aren't such assholes for no fucking reason. It's almost like the same thing like when you were talking about how they try to find little things just to harp on it. That the thing that really pisses me off, and I don't really comment on it, is the whole fucking the refs holding the ladder thing. Yeah. Oh my god, that pisses me off when I see people talk about this shit. Who fucking cares? Who cares?
Not to mention, they did it in WWE a lot too. Like,
they do it all the time. There's been plenty of instances where people have already posted pictures. Oh, but it wasn't on the main broadcast when they showed it on TV. Who gives a shit? It still happened. Who cares if it's shown on TV or not? That doesn't even make any goddamn sense. Oh, nobody should be holding this broken ladder for Will Hobbs so that we can complain when he has to go get another fucking ladder and it takes him 20 minutes. Oh, why the fuck didn't somebody get up in that amount of time? Because it wasn't the fucking finish, you moron. That's why. So you're going to find something to complain about anyway if they do it a certain way. That's the difference between that hindsight and our hindsight when we're talking about the first Jim Cornette thing that we were talking about, right? When you go back and be like, oh, maybe they should have done it this way, it would have been fine. Oh, yeah, click, click, click. But guess what these fans of Jim Cornette do? If you do it that way, then they'll just say something like I just said. Oh, why did it take him so long and nobody got up? Because the fucking ladder was broke. You didn't want anybody to hold the fucking ladder.
If he did climb it and fucking fell and got injured, oh, it's so unsafe. AEW's so unsafe. They should have had the refs hold the ladder.
You know, I'm so glad that this ban list came out because it's so unsafe. The climb broken ladders. No shit, guy. That's why they held it. You think that people weren't holding it for fucking Jeff Hardy when he's literally just standing on top of a fucking 30-foot ladder on the tippy top of the ladder? And the ladder doesn't move at all every time he jumps. You think that's a coincidence? You think he's just fucking light as a feather up there and the ladder doesn't move or shake at all when he's on the tippy top of the ladder falling off of Swanton Bomb? The ladder doesn't move at all.
When I put my ladder up against the edge of my fucking house, okay, and I climb up that bitch, I don't feel safe. So that man's standing on top of a 30-foot ladder. I think mine's like 16, 18. Just to get to my roof and having the house as the other end of it doesn't feel great. If I were to try to get to the top of that shit and just stand on it as like an A-frame ladder, fuck no. Yeah, I want like 10 people holding that shit at all times, okay? I'd rather them be safe and it look a little different on television than for them to just be like, oh yeah, let me just fucking go do this for it to look slightly better on camera. Nobody gives a fuck. Shut up.
It's such a dumb thing to be upset about or to point out in general anyway. Like, who cares? How did that ruin it for you when I don't even pay attention to the ref? I'm looking at the fucking dude at the top of the ladder. And right. Then when he makes the jump and they bring him down, I'm looking at the fucking guy that he's about to fall on. So I don't even see the ref till you fucking post the still pictures anyway. So you're literally hate watching. That's the only way you could be doing it.
Yeah. It's like the thing too, like where the camera will catch two opponents in like a, so like let's say it's a 3-on-3 Elite versus BCC or whatever, and there'll be something where they do like a zoomed out shot and something important is happening in the ring, but you'll catch like Moxley saying something to one of the guys on the other team on the outside of the ring or whatever, and everybody's like, oh, they caught them fucking collaborating the next spot, blah blah blah. First of all, in your head, if you're trying to like suspend disbelief, why don't you just tell yourself that he was just talking shit to the guy, say, hey, go fuck yourself, and then kept walking, right? What's the problem with that? Secondly, it's going to happen. This is a live production.
Something Moxley, I feel like Moxley would do, by the way.
I know. I mean, it's stupid. Speaking of Moxley, congrats to him. He won a...
Yeah, I saw that.
He won his Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu.
The grapple thing.
Yeah, his grappling tournament. It's like a no-gi 30-plus super heavyweight, and he won. Now, since they are super divided in divisions and stuff over there, there was only one other person in his division, but he did win, so congrats to him. But, yeah, man, that's crazy. Like, that they hyper-focus on shit like that and not just like, okay, the entire point of this is that we're suspending disbelief, if you understand that, right?
Yeah, it's very annoying. All right, last topic. We got to talk about this, and it's not even the ban list. I cut that out of the show, too. We got to talk about this, though, because it happened last night, and it's actually wrestling-related in the ring.
Jay White?
Yeah, baby. All of
Fuck
it.
Fuck yeah.
That fucking match was nuts.
Okay.
As you can see, I gave it 5 stars. The 5 stars up on the screen, you can see that. It could have more than 5 stars, for all I fucking know, when Dave Meltzer comes out with his ratings. But my question to you is, because now I'm going to go out on the, I'm just going to go ahead and fucking say it. In my opinion, it was the best 2 out of 3 falls match I've ever seen. I don't care if it's singles in AEW, in WWE. I know there's a lot of them. I think there's 2 others in AEW, which is Danielson versus Guevara and Danielson versus Garcia. I think this was better than both of those. I can't think of any off the top of my head right now in WWE. Just because I was thinking in just the context of AEW, obviously. So I'm already telling you right now that I think it's the best 2 out of 3 falls match in AEW. My question then turns to, is it the best tag team match? Did this beat Revolution between the Young Bucks and Omega Page?
Okay. No, but it was.
Is it because of the story,
fucking,
though? Is it because of the story? Okay, got you.
Yeah. And it was way fucking closer than I thought it would be to beating it, for sure. But no, I don't think it quite gets there because the story behind the other one was just too good. As far as like best 2 out of 3 falls match of AEW history, probably. Best 2 out of 3 falls match of wrestling history, no.
You still got Omega Okada?
Omega Okada, Omega Okada for sure. I think that one's going to stand, like the Dominion 2018 match is going to stand head and shoulders above a lot of 2 out of 3 falls matches for a very long time. I did really enjoy the way that they teased the draw on the third fall on this with the 5 minutes left thing.
Well, see, the way I thought it set up is kind of like the new WWE way that they do it, where the first fall will go like 15, 20 minutes, and then the second fall will be real quick, and then we'll have like a 10-minute thing at the end. So after the first one finally happened, I'm sitting there like, okay, well, where the fuck is the second fall? And Jay White was kicking out of fucking everything.
Everything,
dude. It was like he was in New Japan. He was just fucking kicking out of everything. And then when they finally got to the second fall, I was like, dude, how much time is left? Like, is the third fall going to be quick? No, it's not. It was fucking insane. It was like literally 3 matches into one. There was no quick fucking fall. And like you said, they fucking teased the draw at the end. And they said 5 minutes left, and they ended up winning that 58 minutes something or something like that. It was insane. Yeah. Crazy ass match. I will say that I didn't like the fact that Juice Robinson took both fucking losses, and Jay White was the one that got the pin in the one victory for them. It kind of made Juice look a little weak there. I would have preferred Jay White take the first fall. I mean, not the first fall, but the first pin from FTR, and then Juice take the second one, but it's whatever. Not that big of a deal. But they really made it look like Jay White was, like, unstoppable, and the only reason he lost is because he had Juice Robinson on his team.
So I said this, I wanted to look this up, because I remember saying it to you. On July 9th, I said, just now watching Collision, this FTR Bullet Club Gold match is great. And said, yeah, the whole show is pretty good.
Yeah, this probably is the one that they had when Bullet Club won to get this match, mm-hmm. Yes.
And I said, all that time they just got, and now they do a 2 out of 3 falls next week. That's going to be half the episode. And it was half the fucking episode.
Do you think they continue, though? Because technically it's 2-2 overall.
So the Eliminator, they won. So because they lost the championship match or whatever, they're not barred from challenging from it again. The Eliminator, the way that's supposed to work is if you lose the Eliminator, you're no longer able to challenge for it for however long or whatever. But they won the Eliminator. They just lost the title match. So technically, they could challenge for it again, really. And technically, they did beat them twice, and they've lost twice. So yeah, you're right. It's
I would not be opposed to seeing an all-in rematch on this one.
Yeah. I was thinking, this is, it's, I knew it wasn't going to fucking happen, but I was like, just give them the belts, bro. Just give them the belts. Just let them win. Just give them the belts. It'll be more interesting to see FTR try to get them back than it will to have them just like win here and then try to figure out what to do from there. So,
Okay, so 3 hours of wrestling, shit ton of title matches. Does it annoy you when you have that many title matches and none of them change hands, especially when some of them are like really long reigns already? And then you look at something like Slammiversary and they had 5 fucking title changes on one pay-per-view.
I thought for sure that Archer was going to win. And then I was like, no, they're probably going to have him win the title reign on, or lose the title reign on like an actual pay-per-view or something. But I was a little bit irritated just with no major like advancements or anything in championship positions. I really wanted Archer to win though. I didn't like the count out thing. I thought that was kind of cheesy.
Okay, so let's, I mean, I don't have it on the show or anything, and I'm going to cut it right here for the fucking, for the video on YouTube or whatever, basically, for when we talk about the tag team lineup, because that's obviously the thing that stood out the most. But I got to ask, what did you think of Ricky Starks and Willow Nightingale being the Owen Hart winners?
Willow, obviously, I'm fine with. I thought it was good. I think it sets up an interesting thing.
I think they were actually both, I think they were both the actual underdogs, though. I don't think anybody expected those two to be the ones that came out on top in these. Because of the storyline with Ruby losing last year, everybody's like, oh yeah, this is Ruby's year type deal. Plus she won't be looked at as like the third wheel type deal in the Outcast if you give her the victory. And then on the CM Punk side, it's because CM Punk just beat Samoa Joe. Why the fuck would he lose to Ricky Starks now type deal? I don't have a problem with either one happening. I'm very happy for both of them, but I do believe that they were both the clear underdogs going in, and they both ended up winning, which I thought was interesting.
Yeah, I think the Willow thing, it does advance some of the stuff that she's got going on in other organizations. So I'm not.
It's almost impossible not to keep Willow towards at the top of the main event now and in a title picture all the time. Between New Japan giving her the strong title, or, you know, her taking the strong title, and then fucking now winning this and the crowd being behind her like they are, and with Hayter being out for who knows how long, hopefully not too much longer because of All In coming up, but it's almost like you have to keep Willow up there, which is a good thing.
Mm-hmm. So she doesn't get lost in the shuffle type. You don't want to mess up the relationship with New Japan by having their champion lose a lot either. So you're kind of forced to book her strong. I want to see her and Athena do like a maybe title versus title match or something along those lines.
Well, she doesn't have the title anymore. That's what I'm saying.
Who?
Willow lost it.
To who?
To Julia, I believe.
Did she?
I'm pretty sure.
Oh, shit. That was just a week ago. I don't know how the fuck I missed that.
Yeah.
No. Okay. Well, never mind then. Well, then...
I feel like she's the easy out for Athena to lose the title, though. Who's been killing it, by the way.
Yeah. That's probably some of the best work of her career. Like, by far. So yeah, I think that all made sense. That was a good call. All good. Let's talk about the Punk Starks thing. I think everybody wants to see CM Punk turn heel, including the people that cheer for him. They want to see him turn heel.
Which having he teased Starks, on his first night back, but didn't actually do it.
Right, and having Starks win by cheating, and then the way that he took the trophy away from Liger was like heel shit. It was like 100%.
Yeah, like they're teasing him to go heel instead, which I don't like because they're also at the same time turning Hobbs face. What the fuck? Why?
Yeah. Yeah,
put them back on the same page and get them back in a tag team to win the tag titles, goddammit.
It's like, look, I see the error of my ways. I'm sorry that I wasn't ruthlessly aggressive enough. Okay, I'm back. I had the same thought.
Have Hobbs get beat down by QTV after they lose or something, and then have Ricky Starks come out and help him. I don't give a fuck how we do it, but we got to get a mic on the same page. It would be monster faces, by the way, as a tag team.
Yeah, probably. I mean, they were really over when they were a tag team.
And you could always do like the Swerve Keith Lee type deal. You get them back together, right? As monster faces, everybody's behind Hobbs now because he saw the error of his ways, and now they finally achieved the tag titles again. And then whenever they lose them, Starks turns on him instead, and then Starks goes heel, and Hobbs can stay face. Do a complete backwards thing, but they still get that title run like we always, like we all wanted them to have that they never got. Okay, so what do you think they do with Ricky Starks coming out of this then? He's obviously going to have another one-on-one match with Punk, right? To go against whatever he's got in the bag type deal, because Punk's whole fucking promo was, hey, if you can beat me, you can have what's in this bag type deal. That's what he was telling Jay White. Well, Ricky Starks beat him. So what's going on with that? And what's in the bag? Is it actually going to be another fucking world title is the problem. It's another problem you have. So you just didn't like the Ricky Starks thing because of the heel tactics at the end?
I didn't like it because it leaves... Okay, I don't like CM Punk being left as the guy who kind of got like screwed over and now he's trying to seem...
Because like, no one cares that he got screwed over type deal?
Right.
Yeah, yeah. So you would rather have CM Punk win and then do the heel of shit instead? Because Even if he held the ropes or whatever, I promise you there's no scenario in all of Doctor Strange's multiverses that he would have fucking disrespected Juice and Thunder Liger afterwards. By the way, I tweeted this, who brings in Liger in full pack gear for that one little moment where he just gets the trophy ripped? He flew from Japan, bro, for that? You better have him on Dynamite doing something, I swear to God. Because that's ridiculous. That's such a bullshit.
I think that there is a... So, I think there is a way to do, like, a CM Punk heel turn out of this. Where he gets, like, so frustrated by having lost to someone cheating.
But FTR has to turn too, that's the thing. And people love FTR still.
I don't have to. There have been situations in the past where one guy was heel and another guy was face and they were still together, kind of. Now, one obviously always kind of corrupts the other one or they split, but, I mean, you can still do it. And they're not technically like a faction. Not really. They work together sometimes, but it's not like they're a faction, you know? But, I mean, I'm not as worried about that part of it. But people want CM Punk to turn heel. People that hate him want him to turn heel, and people that like him want him to turn heel so they can feel cool when they cheer him. So he can
have more edge in his promos, honestly. That's the main part.
Yeah.
He's not doing the honeymoon shit.
Yeah.
I mean, he can do the Bret Hart shit where you're just cheered in Chicago and nowhere else. It's not that big of a deal.
I think Starks is so well-liked that fucking him over, cheating to win against him, would have been like a really big... like heat thing for Punk.
I thought it was fine saying, until the Liger thing, though. I'm with you. I don't have a problem with him, the cheating part at the end, because really, how is Starks going to beat CM Punk?
Right.
You get what I'm saying? Like, where they are at, where they're at on the card, and Punk just beat Samoa Joe and slayed the beast that was Samoa Joe that he could never beat. There was nobody going in that match thinking Punk was going to lose to fucking Ricky Starks. Definitely not clean. So I have no problem with Ricky Starks holding the ropes. I have a problem with the shit afterwards. And then, not only did he just take the thing from fucking Liger, like give me my shit, but then he was nice to Owen Hart's wife or widow afterwards on Battle of the Belts. So you went right back to being a face instead of just like walking away or showing another sign of you turning heel type deal. So it was just really weird that they're going back and forth. I just didn't like the Liger part of it. I don't have a problem with him cheating to beat Punk because that's the only way he was going to beat Punk.
Yeah. There've been turns from somebody cheating, right? Like, where a guy was... somebody else used, like, some kind of heel tactic against them, and then they're the ones that ended up turning because... I mean, technically, I guess the Steve Austin Bret Hart thing in a way, right? Because Steve Austin...
Yeah, I mean, but he just left the fucking... he started brawling like Austin did and stuff, and he was basically sinking down to his level, but then the real thing that turned him heel is because... everybody was enamored with, you know, Austin's fucking crimson mask, and then Bret wouldn't let the hold go after the match, which is what really drove it home that I'm going to be an asshole about this, even though I got the dub.
Yeah. I mean, like, the Royal Rumble thing, obviously, too, where Steve Austin technically cheated to to do that.
Yeah, that was funny as fuck. He got thrown out, but he came back in because none of the rest were looking at him. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's not like heel tactics like that haven't led to turns of someone who was not previously a heel, I guess. They could do something like that with Punk. I think they should do something like that. They could end up with, like, both of them ending being heel after this. I didn't like the Liger thing. It was announced beforehand that Martha Hart was supposed to give them to them, right? And then they just kind of sent Liger out to do it, which is weird. It almost seemed like a last-minute sort of switch. Maybe she didn't get there on time, or maybe she just didn't want to come out right then.
Or maybe they didn't want to have Ricky Stark snatch it out of her hand.
Yeah, it could have been that, too. But then, how the fuck was Liger just there? Like, it was not planned, right? That's weird.
Well, they announced on Twitter that he was going to be there.
Yeah, but it's just strange, right?
I mean, he has the Owen Hart connection, obviously, because Owen Hart was the junior heavyweight in Japan when they were wrestling each other, too.
And he did say at one point, he said, the great Muda told me that I can come out of retirement whenever I want.
He did say that. He did say that. I saw the gif of it, and I'm like, yes, let's go. Let's do it. Muda was right. Muda's probably going to do it, too, eventually. Who gives a shit? No one.
I don't know.
I don't think Muda's going to do it, but...
His last little series of stuff was like a good capstone to his career. I don't think he's gonna do that.
I don't know. If I'm Liger and I'm sitting over there watching Ultimo Dragon still have crazy fucking good matches, I'm like, okay, fuck this, I'm coming back.
Their styles are so different, though.
That's true, but I would say that Ultimo Dragon style is a lot more hard to do at his age than Liger's is at his age. It ain't like Liger was doing fucking 450s and shit his entire career and flippity floppy shit like Ultimo Dragon. It was crazy because a lot of people think when they think Liger, they think High Flyer, but he was a lot more fucking ground-based than High Flyer.
As far as like the Punk whatever, I don't mind Ricky Starks winning. I don't mind him winning the way that he won. I think the heel turn with Liger stuff is weird. I hope it leads to a Punk turn. I also think it's weird that you have Punk lose right after beating Samoa Joe, or right after like all the MJF stuff, or you know, a lot of his last few matches he's been very dominant, really. He's won very convincingly, very cleanly, whatever. I'm torn about it. Like it wasn't a satisfying ending to me, I'll say that. Maybe that's really what it is. It's not that I have a problem with it, it's just that until it plays out more, I don't really know how I feel about it. But I don't feel that way at all about the Willow one. I think the Willow one was great. It made total sense.
So it's going to be weird because how is Ricky Starks going to act on Dynamite or Collision next week? Or this week, I guess, technically. But when he has that first promo, we'll definitely be able to tell if he's actually going to be heel or not.
I imagine he'll act a little bit more cocky. But he might not. It's not. I don't think he's going to come out and do the, oh, in this town of Philadelphia, well, guess what?
Oh, yeah, it's not going to be like that, folks. No, but there will be hidden hints in there and shit like that that you'll know. You'll be able to tell. I've been watching wrestling long enough that I'll be able to tell.
Yeah. We'll see what tunnel he comes out of, yeah?
Yeah, I guess.
That's the way to tell.
Or what tunnel he goes back through.
Yeah.
Speaking of,
well, did he go through? Actually, that's a good question. When he left, what tunnel did he go through?
He wasn't even paying attention. I was looking at Liger. Me and Liger were both just confused looking at each other. Were stunned.
That was the funny thing with the Jungle Boy turn. He starts to go through the one.
Yeah. Well, that's the funny thing with what I want to get into next is my favorite shit in AEW right now, which is MJF and Adam Cole, where MJF will come out of the heel tunnel and then wait for Adam Cole to come out of the face tunnel. So he knows he's still an asshole and he doesn't care. He's still tag team and trying to be friends with him. But these last two fucking weeks with those two, man, have been fucking great. Great. Yeah. They even filmed an Instagram ad for Fight Forever after this last promo they did where they were playing the video games together or whatever. Mm-hmm. And you got to feel bad for MJF because he never had any friends to play multiplayer games with or whatever. Yeah. Well, they did a fucking ad for Fight Forever on Instagram and it's so fucking funny. And a lot of people won't get it unless they had watched, you know, that week or whatever, that segment or whatever, but it's so fucking good. I was like, I'm loving everything they're doing right now. Loving how he's pretending he's Roderick Strong coming out there, running around and fucking doing all the
thing the
boom and shit with him. Yeah, doing the whole Adam Cole shit with him. the double clothesline. It's going to be so good because it was a feud that I really didn't care about. And then when Adam Cole went to a draw with him, I was like, oh shit, they're just going to give Adam Cole another shot at it or whatever. But doing this long storyline like this and making you care about MJF when you know you shouldn't, and everybody knows they shouldn't, but they're doing it anyway because he's so fucking good, that when he turns on Adam Cole, and he will turn, it's going to fucking, like, everybody's going to boo the fucking roof off the goddamn building. It's going to be nuts. Hey, it's crazy. And you know it's coming, and you're still going to do it, and you're still going to fucking fall for it. It's nuts.
They won't do it, but what they should do, is Roderick Strong starts being to Adam Cole, like, hey, like, you see what he's fucking doing, like, because he already has kind of been doing that. And then Adam Cole's like, yeah, I know. And you think that Adam Cole's going to be the one that, like, gets fucked over. But then he fucking turns on MJF. You do a double turn with it. That'd be
good.
Yeah,
because he's been saying that he knows what he's doing the entire time. Like, he's going to outsmart MJF. Yeah.
Right.
But then you really risk people cheering for MJF though if you do that, because he's so good at what he's doing. And the one of the reasons why I like the way they're doing this so much is because MJF started getting cheers, and now he's accepting the cheers because he knows he's gonna be a fucking monster heel again right after. So it's gonna work so good if they do it like that. I agree that it would be interesting if Adam Cole was finally the first non-stupid babyface and outsmarted the heel.
That's the problem with it. It's the
but I don't know. I don't know if they're going to attach to Adam Cole for, yeah, you fucking finally got him, or if MJF was so good at his fucking role that it's like, oh man, I feel bad for MJF. He finally thought he had a friend and he fucking got fucked over.
No, there's a way to, if they're really trying to avoid that, the way that you do that is you have Adam Cole turn without any exposition of the why, right? But like, over the past couple weeks, you set up stuff where maybe MJF leaves his phone near Adam Cole or something like that, and Adam Cole looks at it, and then the camera cuts. Like, building up to that, and then after the turn happens, and everybody's fucking booing Adam Cole. They're like, oh, fuck, like, what are you doing? Like, oh, we feel so bad for MJF. And then the next week he comes out, and then a video package plays where he's like, look, I went through his fucking phone. Like, he's texting all this shit. Here was his plan. Here's what he thought he was going to do. He was trying to avoid a match with me. He said he was going to turn on me. He was going to try to get Roderick Strong injured. Like, all that stuff, that's how you would have to play it out. That would make sense.
You know what else? You could also do the was the old Evolution storyline where Batista was listening to Triple H and Rick call Batista stupid when he had to make the decision on who he was going to go after he won the Royal Rumble.
Yep.
And then they all thought they were on the same page, and then Batista turned on them and gave them the thumbs down or whatever. You could also do something like that leading up to that. You could also, you want to talk about a fucking swerve. How about fucking Roderick Strong is the one that costs them the tag titles? And Roderick turns heel out of nowhere.
Would give him something to do.
I mean, they've been giving him dubs too, though. Besides the Samoa Joe one, which he was actually competitive in. They let him beat Jericho, by the way, in his first match there. Like, they were giving him wins up to that point. Seeing him turn heel would be interesting, especially if they paired him with Marina afterwards. Because, you know, they could go against Adam Cole and Britt in a mixed tag match. I think that would be cool. Stuff like that, the connections with all that. But yeah, it would be nuts if fucking Adam Cole got turned on by Roderick Strong, who he thought was the one person he could turn to because O'Reilly's still hurt. That'd be fucking nuts.
That could be it. I mean, they could bring in O'Reilly for part of it too. I don't know where he's at in his recovery right now, but that would be an interesting little wrinkle to bring into it too. You have Roderick Strong, like, maybe not
what
even
if, what if you have Roderick Strong turn because MJF paid him off? And then you bring in Kyle O'Reilly and Adam Cole versus Roderick Strong and MJF.
I don't think that they've made his character one that would take a payoff to turn on Cole is the problem. I think that if you're gonna do the Roderick Strong turn, the way that you would have to do it is Strong accidentally costs them the tag team title somehow. And then MJF is like, look, he's like trying to fuck you over because, like, he's petty, he's jealous, whatever.
Yeah, jealous, yeah.
And then Cole is kind of like, yeah, okay, like, that's true. Like, Roderick, you got to chill the fuck out. And then you bring in Kyle O'Reilly to try to team up with Strong and have those two go against each other. And the two guys are trying to fucking, like, bring some kind of clarity back to Adam Cole. And Adam Cole is not fully turned or anything either. And then MJF is still the one being the manipulative piece of shit. It's pretty much
how you could always have it to be like, because I don't know how close Kyle O'Reilly is to returning, but you could always have it where MJF turns on Adam Cole. Roderick Strong was like, I try to fucking tell you. And then he just leaves Adam Cole to himself. So he has nobody. Right. And then there's this one week where MJF is beating the shit out of him or something. That's when O'Reilly comes back. Because, like, you have Roderick Strong come out to the stage and, like, he's going to help and he's just, like, second guessing, like, nah, fuck you, man. You didn't listen to me type deal. Kind of like what Dark Order's doing with. And kind of like what Dark Order was doing with Adam Page or whatever. Well, nah, fuck you, man. You wasn't listening to me. And then O'Reilly runs by him or whatever and everybody goes fucking nuts to save the day or whatever. You could do something like that too. Like, there's a lot of. It's one of the things that we love about AEW. There's so many fucking things that could come out of this. Yes, you have the obvious answer, but they don't always go with the obvious answer. They don't always go with the MJF is just going to fuck him over, which is what everybody thinks is going to happen. Everybody thought that fucking Swerve and Keith Lee weren't going to win the tag titles because they were already showing dissension within the tag team. They ended up winning the tag titles and having a whole fucking tag title run before they officially split.
And you remember how they slow played the MJF Cody thing too. Like that, they didn't do that immediately either. Like the first couple opportunities.
It could be a thing where they were going to have a payoff soon, but it got super over like the Sami Zayn thing and they were like, no, let's keep it going. Fuck it. It's fucking doing really well. Also, it plays into the overall aspect away from the kayfabe in real life of, hey, we want MJF to be a champion that almost never defends it. Well, guess what? If he's in the tag team division, he doesn't have to defend it. If he's tag team champions with Adam Cole, he's not defending it. So, like, that plays into that whole thing, too. Because everybody be like, oh, he doesn't defend it. Well, he's a fucking tag team champion. What do you want him to do?
He's got the Roman Reigns problem. He's got to be in his tag
match. Well, I wouldn't say he has the Roman Reigns problem, but yeah. But yeah, he's supposed to be that type of heel, like the Ric Flair type of heel. We're like, no, motherfucker, you got to earn that shit to go against me. But now, in the meantime, because everybody was tired of him doing the exact same setup of, like, hey, you got to go through these three guys to go against me type deal, or you got to prove yourself to go against me. This is a little chunk in the breaking the action where it's like, you know what? We can have him do this instead, and then people won't bitch about a repeat storyline, and it'll also make sense of why he's not defending the world title.
And he's still on TV, so yeah, it's exactly. Not like he's an absent champion either.
Yeah.
I like it. I like what they're doing with it. And it's very entertaining.
Yeah, it's probably my favorite part of either wrestling show right now. It's been real. We'll see you guys next week, hopefully, if everything plays out accordingly. Deuces!